Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm about to make an announcement that I had hoped we could avoid, but we think this is the best course of action. Debido a una alza en casos de influenza H1N1, las escuelas se van a cerrar promo precaución.
Never mind that he said it was H1N1, lost in the translation, instead of H1N1, or that they were houses of influenza instead of cases of influenza. Apologies on behalf of the mayor for his Spanish. But the mayor is holding another briefing at this hour on swine flu in New York City. New York is becoming the global epicenter of the disease, as a second possible death is being reported, a 16-month-old. The flu remains mild, we must say, for the vast majority of patients. And remember that 30,000 people a year worldwide, 30,000 every winter, die from regular flu, about 1,000 per year in New York City. But fear is spreading faster than the virus, and the policy for closing schools remains inconsistent in any language. So let's keep talking about it. With me now are WNYC's Beth Fertig, who's been covering the schools angle of the influenza outbreak, and Tom Skinner, a spokesman for the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. Tom Skinner, thank you very much for coming on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And Beth Fertig, good morning. Beth, I read that the assistant principal who died, Mitchell Weiner of IS-238 in Queens, had personally asked the city to shut down his school on May 11th. This is according to the Daily News today, after several cases. But they said no. After that, he got it and then died on Sunday. Is that confirmed, as far as you know, that he specifically made that request?
No, I have not heard that personally, and I think there's going to be a lot more coming out in the next few days from the union, from his family. Obviously, it's very difficult trying to get a straight story from his family right now while they're mourning. The memorial service or funeral service is going to be held tomorrow out in Fresh Meadows. So I think there's going to be a trickle of information coming out very soon about him, because as of yesterday, the principals union and the teachers union, who both have contact with the family because his wife also taught at the same school, refused to say what sort of pre-existing health conditions could have existed for this man. They said they'd like to leave that to the family because, of course, there's been reports that he had gout. Did that or did that not contribute to weakening his immune system and making him more susceptible to the virus? You know, we need to know whether there was something else going on, because it raises the alarm bells for people to hear that a previously healthy man can suddenly die of the flu. But if you know that there are other things going on, then that, right, you know, it's sort of mitigating factors.
But nevertheless, and Tom Skinner from the CDC, I'll bring you right in on this, as a matter of public health policy, we're supposed to protect the weakest among us, right? So we're not supposed to set health policy based on what a healthy young adult would be expected to react to, but rather what people with asthma, what people with diabetes, what people with heart disease might suffer if a certain disease spread. I mean, that's the spread. That's the standard, isn't it?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I mean, the whole issue of school closings is a very challenging and difficult issue, and I know that officials are grappling with this and having difficulties deciding what the right thing to do is. You know, our guidance on our website basically says that, you know, if a school has one or two cases, they probably don't need to shut down. I mean, we want kids in school. That's where they need to be learning. At the same time, if a school is experienced an unusually, you know, high number of cases and kids and administrators and the school is really having a difficult time functioning because of the outbreak, then it makes sense to close down the school.
Well, what would that number
ride its course?
Tom, what would that number be? Does the CDC have a recommendation? Because this is exactly where the mayor got stymied at his news conference yesterday.
We don't. There is no magical cutoff. If you have, you know, 5 cases, 10 cases, or 100 cases, I think we're leaving it up to school officials to do what they think is the best thing to do based on the situation that's unfolding in their school. We do know that with seasonal influenza, which we see every year, you know, we don't have schools closing down when we see cases of influenza in schools. And so I think the other important message we do not want to lose sight of is the fact that we really all have a personal amount of responsibility in this, and that we need to keep our kids home if they're sick, and we need to stay at home as well if we're sick, and we need to continue to push the importance of hand washing in these settings as well.
Now, here is Mayor Bloomberg from yesterday's news conference, asked why a certain school has an outbreak. Asked how much of an outbreak in the school means that it will be closed.
We don't know. But when you see a cluster all of a sudden, you have to decide, is it likely to grow? I mean, if 100% of the students already had it, I think we probably would not close the school because they can't transmit it. But if a percentage has it, the likelihood of everybody getting it is just that much greater.
So, Beth Fertig, is it clear to you this morning what the city's policy is regarding when to close a school?
Case-by-case basis. That is the word from the Health Department and from the Department of Education. Every school is different. What they do is they say that if they get reports of a high cluster of absenteeism at a particular school, then they investigate whether the students were staying home out of an abundance of caution because their parents didn't want them to go to school, or if they really were sick, what type of illness they had. Was it a fever? So they've been requesting that parents let the schools know why their children are homesick. They have staff at the schools calling the families. The school that I visited yesterday, where they held the press conference in Maspeth, IS-73, which ultimately was not closed yesterday, the Department of Health was there because over 300 students were out of a student body of 1,720 yesterday. So they wanted to see what was going on over there. And about 25 students were sent home sick that day. I spoke to two who were leaving with their families. One girl had a high fever of 101.2, which was high enough to get sent home, and she felt very ill. Her father had to come pick her up from work. Another boy was being taken home because he had a runny nose, and he said, I think I just have allergies. But they need to investigate what is causing the children to go home before they decide whether or not to shut down a school.
And listeners, if you have any questions about the swine flu, precautions to take, how to get diagnosed, anything, we're lucky to have Tom Skinner from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control with us from Atlanta this morning, and WNYC's Beth Fertig, who's following the school's angle here. 212-433-WNYC, if you want to call in, 212-433-9692, or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Tom Skinner, what does it mean that the flu seems to be spreading mostly in schools and not, say, in nursing homes or hospitals? Does it mean something about this strain attacking younger bodies for some reason, or can we draw that conclusion?
Well, I think we're trying to sort all of that out. I think early on, some of the cases in New York City were associated with children, younger people having traveled to Mexico. So I think there's some validity there. But we're still trying to sort out, you know, why it is we're seeing these cases in schools right now. However, I think this is, you know, behaving like a strain of seasonal influenza. So I believe it's just, you know, a matter of time before we start seeing some cases in nursing homes and healthcare facilities as we move through the summer, especially into our flu season, which starts normally in October, November, and runs through February and March.
So let me ask you something else about treating this as any other seasonal flu outbreak, or why we're not. Because here in New York, as you know, we've had one, possibly two deaths related to the flu at this point. In a typical year, from the stats I've been reading, we have about 1,000 flu deaths in New York, but they never make the news or result in school closures. We have about 30,000, and maybe you can confirm that number, a typical year, regular flu deaths, 30,000 nationwide in one year. Does that suggest we're either overreacting to this flu or underreacting to every other flu?
Well, what we're dealing with is a new strain of influenza, and we're still learning about it. I think there's a lot of studies that we need to finish that are ongoing right now to help us learn more about this virus. So I think what we're seeing are public health officials, school officials, and others taking these measures that they're taking out of an abundance of caution. right now as we continue to learn more about this virus. And so as time moves on and we learn more about how, you know, we're doing studies looking at attack rates, how transmissible is the virus, we're looking at, you know, the virulence of the virus, we're looking at how it behaves in hospitalized patients. Is it, you know, there's still a lot that we're learning about it. And so as we learn, I think you're seeing steps being taken out of an abundance of caution right now.
Is it true, Tom, that 30,000 Americans die in a typical year from influenza?
That's correct. That's based on estimates from various surveillance systems that we have in place to track influenza. But yes, seasonal influenza is very serious, and each year tens of thousands of people die, primarily those with underlying health conditions, the very young, the old, people with heart and lung disease, people with asthma, diabetes.
That's why you recommend, and it's worth repeating, that everybody, especially in those categories, get flu shots each year, which, you know, which are not perfect, but they help for many people. But do you think that stat means that we're not doing enough to prevent people should be from getting influenza if it's killing 30,000 Americans a year? Imagine if some other things that we could think of in the news were killing 30,000 people a year. There would be a national outcry. Should we be doing more to close schools in ordinary times? Should we be doing more to isolate people if they have the so-called regular flu to you know, reduce these 30,000 deaths?
Well, I don't think there's any question that people lose sight of the fact how serious influenza can be. For most of us, influenza is a mere nuisance. You know, we're going to feel like a, you know, maybe a train hit us for 2 or 3 days, 4 days, but we're going to recover. But in certain individuals, it can be very, very serious, and it can be life-threatening. And so we do need to make sure, as you alluded to earlier, that people get vaccinated each and every year, particularly those that are at high risk for the serious complications from influenza. We're moving forward with developing a vaccine to treat seasonal influenza that we expect to circulate. The decision as to whether we're going to develop a vaccine and to what scale for this particular novel strain of influenza is still being decided.
Let's take a phone call. Laura in Jackson Heights has a question that a lot of people have been asking. Laura, thank you for calling. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, so I was very impacted upon by the program yesterday with Irwin Redliner and about how there's like this feeling that not enough people are being tested. So my daughter, I got a call that my daughter was sick yesterday and her fever was going up gradually after I brought her home and not feeling well at all. And I spoke with her doctor's office twice, once in the afternoon and once at night when I called when her fever went up to 102.5. And I couldn't get a sense about why shouldn't I bring her in to get her tested. So, and she's doing better now, and I think she probably doesn't have the flu. But I also work with a medically vulnerable population myself. I'm staying home from work at least part of the day today. And I just don't get why we can't get, why is it easier to get her tested?
So, Beth Fertig, did this come up at the event yesterday with the mayor and the health commissioner and the school's chancellor? Because I know other parents have been concerned that doctors are not testing for swine flu when kids are presenting with flu-like symptoms.
I was at the school in Queens. My colleague Fred Mogul, who covers healthcare, was with the mayor and the health commissioner. And when we talked later on about this, Fred said that the response to why they weren't testing everyone was because they were acting on the presumption that they probably did have it and that it was just better to send the kids home, let them get better, bring them back to school, rather than to test at everybody who was having a fever or flu-like symptoms, that if it's moving so quickly and so many children are getting this that they can't possibly test everyone was pretty much the assumption, that at least they'll act as though they probably have it.
So Tom Skinner from the CDC, are all the numbers that we're seeing useless? Because the official number of cases in the United States, I believe, is about 9,000. But independent experts estimate it's really about 100,000. What are the guidelines for testing and what should they be?
Answer that, let me just elaborate a little bit more on some information that the caller just brought up.
Please.
You know, if a parent has a child who has, you know, who is at increased risk for the serious complications from influenza. And again, I would just allude back to some of those points that I made. You know, those that are at high risk for the serious complications include chronic pulmonary disease, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, and so on, asthma. If a parent has a child who comes down with the signs and symptoms of influenza and they're in one of those high risk categories, they should be telling their doctor that you know, and their doctor should be prescribing antivirals for that person to take. So there are, you know, things that parents need to do to educate their doctors about the signs and symptoms that their child is exhibiting, as well as providing their doctor with some history about their child to, you know, help guide the clinician and the physician in doing the right thing in regards to treatment. Most children who come down with influenza, and this influenza and seasonal influenza, will recover just fine, and I think we need to keep that in mind.
As far as
the number of cases of this particular strain of influenza nationwide, we've seen, you know, close to 5,500 confirmed or probable cases. But again, you've alluded to the fact that there are probably many, many more cases out there that just, you know, we won't have test results for, because as your reporter just indicated, not all cases are being reported. There's now the belief that we should assume that this is widespread and that most, you know, that people who are presenting with flu-like illness probably have it.
We're going to add to this conversation team leader from the World Health Organization in Geneva in just a second. But Laura in Jackson Heights, if you're still there, I want to ask you one other thing. You said you're taking at least part of today off.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are people in your workplace who can't really take the day off?
Yes, and in some, it's very hard for me. And I put out an outreach at my work. I'm a psychologist, and I work with medically challenged people as well as psychologically challenged people, but they have medical problems. And, you know, I'm not sure what guidelines we should be following. And I think that it's going to be brought up at their risk management meeting today. It's not a hospital, you know, it's a clinic, but yeah, I feel like I need to know. My daughter's doing well, so I'm not particularly worried about her medically right now. But I kind of need to know what I could be exposing my clients to, my psychotherapy clients, and it does impact how I feel about going to work.
Right, and it's a fair question. And Laura, I'm going to have to leave it there for shortage of time, but thank you very much. You've been really helpful. And Tom Skinner from the Centers for Disease Control, what can people do in that situation if public health policy recommends that they skip work, but it's a financial or a logistical hardship? Does the CDC ever get involved with questions like that?
You know, we are working with businesses across the country and helping guide businesses in the development of plans, you know, that they can incorporate to sort of continue their operations, but do so from, you know, home or satellite locations, if you will. So planning ahead is very, very important, you know, when it comes to continuing operations and assuming that, you know, we're going to be in this for the long haul as we approach our upcoming.
And so, Beth Fertig, is that a factor in why there's a reluctance to close some schools?
Absolutely. The mayor and the school's chancellor say it's a huge hardship on families. There's right now something like 15,000 kids who are staying home from school, and it's enormously difficult for many of these families to take off from work to care for their children, and they want to be very conscious to that and say that we're not going to close the school unless absolutely necessary because it's too difficult for many of the families. They've also, by the way, they've put out packets online for children to do their homework, which the parents can also pick up at an office. So they're doing everything they can to help the kids, you know, stay on top of their studies. The homework packets are pretty funny. They're filled with all different types of exercises.
And here's a little bit of what Mayor Bloomberg had to say about schools that close.
Once you tell people that we're going to be closed for 5 school days, they tend to make plans, and we'd be reticent to not change it. If we had to extend it for health reasons, we certainly would not hesitate to do so. But to end it earlier, it probably wouldn't save anything, and it's difficult enough for families to plan.
Even though, from what I gather, all the germs go away in about a day. Mm-hmm. Also with us now, Dick Thompson, media team leader with the World Health Organization Influenza Response Team. He's good enough to join us from Geneva, Switzerland this morning, where the World Health Organization is having a major meeting. Mr. Thompson, hello from New York. Thank you for coming on with us.
Good afternoon.
And I gather, and yes, it's afternoon in Geneva, the WHO considered designating this a level 6 pandemic, the highest category, but decided to give it what your director called a grace period. What does that mean in terms of public health or public policy?
Well, actually, it hasn't met all the requirements for this to be moved to level 6. There have been plenty of countries that have had community transmission, but what we see is that those countries are all in our PAHO or Americas region. If we see community-level transmission outside that region, in Asia, say, where there's a big outbreak in Japan, or in the Euro region where there are problems both in the UK and Spain, then it would qualify. There would be a discussion and a decision about whether or not we would move to phase 6.
And just to correct a stat I gave before, I said there were an official 9,000 cases in the U.S. It's really 9,000 cases worldwide, 5,000 in the U.S., as our Centers for Disease Control guest was saying. But Dick Thompson from the World Health Organization, when this first came to light in Mexico, there were travel advisories to Mexico placed by some governments. Now the majority of cases worldwide, that 5,000 out of 9,000, are here in the United States. Is the WHO recommending any travel precautions to the United States?
We never recommended travel advisories for Mexico or the United States. By the time it was fully appreciated that this virus had pandemic potential, it had already moved internationally. So we felt that it would be more disruptive than helpful. The virus at the time it was recognized was truly out of the box, and so we had to we were not forced to issue any travel advisories.
And some countries even did crazy things at first, like China detaining anyone with a Mexican passport entering the country. I guess the WHO didn't sanction that.
No, we didn't. In Asia, there's special concern about new diseases because SARS had a tremendous impact on China and Hong Kong especially. So they're very sensitive about new diseases, export and import of new diseases.
The United States is the focus of swine flu attention now, plus some Mexico still and Japan a little bit and a few other countries. Is there a threat to the developing world? Because sometimes these things or vary, whatever medical conditions will hit the developed world, but there's more money there to treat or to isolate or whatever, and then it gets going in the developing world and they are hit much harder. Is that a threat here?
It's one of our primary concerns. WHO has received a lot of criticism, I think, because the current pandemic levels don't have a severity index. The pandemic levels are primarily based on the spread of a new virus. But as we thought about the idea of issuing some kind of hurricane-like scale of severity, it didn't really make a lot of sense. Disease in New York City, which has an outstanding public health system and a healthcare system, would be very different, we believe, in a place like Tanzania, which is struggling and may have large and vulnerable mm-hmm. populations. Mm-hmm. So severity as an issue is going, it's a particular issue in developing worlds, but the severity scale that one would develop for any pandemic really doesn't have much application outside right. of a nation, because severity can change over time. It differs within populations within a certain country, and differs obviously between countries.
And Dick Thompson, media team leader for the World Health Organization Influenza Response Team, thank you for giving us a few minutes. We're going to go live to City Hall right now, where Mayor Bloomberg, Schools Chancellor Klein, and Health Commissioner Frieden are giving an update on the situation in the schools.
Spread of any flu virus. For those who are ill, stay home until you are symptom-free for at least 24 hours. And all of us should cover our coughs and sneezes, wash our hands frequently. In Spanish, recuerda tomar precauciones como lavar sus manos con frecuencia. cubrir su tos, evitar contacto con personas enfermas. Si tiene fiebre, tos o dolor de garganta, quédese en casa. Now, every indication is that New Yorkers are following these procedures. They're showing common sense without panicking. And as so often, I think, with a case with New Yorkers, people are handling this rationally. It is still unknown and unpredictable. The situations you see in this city are people acting at their best. And we do think that we will continue to experience outbreaks periodically. And at some point in time, we assume that this flu will stop spreading. That typically happens with flu when the weather gets warmer and it runs its course through the population. And then what happens in the fall is anybody's guess. But so far, on balance, this strain of flu is new. It seems to spread a little bit more rapidly than the garden variety. On the other hand, it seems to have a lot of symptoms that are more mild than the others. And our experience in places like St. Francis is after the school closed for a while, came back, nobody else seems to have come down with the flu, and everybody recovered rather quickly. There still are tragedies. Our prayers should be with the family and for the assistant principal who died, and clearly for the young baby, the 16-month-old that died yesterday. And, you know, it's so tragic when somebody, particularly at that age. But if everybody follows what we recommend, we will get through this. And
all right, Mayor Bloomberg, and we're going to end our coverage there. It doesn't seem to be a whole lot of new news that he's announcing, at least right at the top of this. But the same recommendations apply. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And if you or someone in your family seems to have flu-like symptoms, stay home. It's common sense. And we thank Tom Skinner from the Centers for Disease Control, who was on earlier, and WNYC's Beth Fertig, who's covering the school's angle of this. What are you looking for today or tomorrow?
I would expect later this afternoon the city would issue news if they decide to close a few more schools. They have Department of Health teams out investigating the absenteeism issues at particular schools, especially in Queens. So we'll know later today if they decide to close any more.
And we should say again, for the vast majority of people who even get this flu, it acts like just a normal flu and you get better in a couple of days. All right, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Have you been ripped off after your New York State inspection sticker fell off your windshield? If so, you're not alone, and we'll talk about that in a minute.